It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said that patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have three square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. I am Kim Munson. This is the Kim Munson Show. Thank you for tuning in. We've got a great show planned for you today. In studio with my guest, Matthew Groves. You're with the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association.
Yes, ma'am.
It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
You know, and the freedom of mobility, the freedom to be able to drive, to be able to go where you want to, when you want to, is inherent in a vibrant middle class. And we've seen a real assault on that here in Colorado, so we're going to be talking about it. It's really important.
Absolutely.
Because it's inherent in people being able to, you know, build a business, take their kids to soccer practice, and you can't do that on the back of a bicycle many times.
I will tell you that my normal work hours are earlier in the morning than most, so I drove through Cherry Creek in rush hour for the first time yesterday. That traffic has become every bit as bad as the East Coast.
But, you know, I think part of it is public policy as well. When I was on city council, you know, we continued to talk about congestion. PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties talk about congestion all the time. But there are things that they do that makes it worse. And sometimes I think it's by design. Now, that's just me. What do you think?
There have been some bureaucrats throughout the municipal levels who have even said expressly, this is my goal. Yeah. We want to get people out of cars.
Yes.
And that you know, has the net effect of making them prisoners of their own neighborhood. So if you live in a place that is facilitated for full spectrum living with schools and restaurants and shopping and grocery stores, that's great. But if you don't live there and you need to commute to get to work, it's going to become very difficult because at bare minimum, if it's not going to take longer, it's going to cost more.
And, you know, and it seems like the average, everyday, regular person, it seems that there's just almost no way, death by a thousand cuts, a fee here, a tax here, a regulation here that makes something more expensive. So we'll be talking, because I know freedom to drive is really important to you, so we'll be
Absolutely.
Talking about that in the third and fourth segment. And I'm hoping that Sherry Pfeiff is calling in the second segment. I normally confirm everybody the next day because it's so early in the morning that if I don't, you know, we might miss them. So I'm hoping Sherry did put that on her calendar and we'll be talking with her. She did a really important piece for Complete Colorado regarding dark money. And it'll be important to understand what's going on in these elections. So it'll be great to have her on. And as we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force. Force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And remember, Nazi stands for the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And if something's a really good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. We continue to see the socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, water, communications, data, and we need to be aware that we have this going on and be able to engage in this battle of ideas and push back on that. And so I want to say thank you to the team, to you, Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for all your good support and hard work. And thank you to my listeners. You are treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose today. Go out and strive for excellence and take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. So, Steve, I've got to get to this. Hold on. Sometimes this one little thing on the outline gets cut off, and I don't want this to be cut off because Matthew is in studio today, and we're talking about transportation and cars. I thought, who could we use as our inspiration/wisdom? Of course, Mario Andretti. He's an Italian-born American former racing driver, one of the most successful Americans in the history of the sport. He is one of only two drivers to have won races in Formula One, IndyCar, World Sports Car Championship, and NASCAR. He also won races in midget cars and sprint cars. He was born in 1940. And this is what he says. He says, for every negative, there's a positive. It's in everything, how you deal with life, outlook, how much energy you put into achieving something. That's why I detest entitlement. Anything that's worthwhile is going to call for some sacrifice. Nothing worthwhile will come to you without a price. People think in sports you have different rules. You really don't. It's whatever motivates you. What do you think of that, Steve?
Wow, Mario. What are you thinking about what's going on in this country today in terms of entitlements?
I know it. And, you know, I was thinking about this whole thing with Disney movies, the old movies. Now I guess they're putting disclaimers on because there's things that weren't politically correct. But I remember reading or watching Snow White. And, you know, they talk about work being industrious. Remember Whistle While You Work, you know, when the dwarves go off to, it's hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go. And
yes.
Where did we get away from you owe me instead of, you know, I could earn it? Any thoughts on that, Matthew?
I remember, so it's not Disney per se, but watching Looney Tunes and Speedy Gonzales, and he always had that cousin Slowpoke Rodriguez. And that was, I think, when we made the turn a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably, you know, yeah, culture has an effect on a lot of things. But, okay, I've got some jokes for you. Again, I tried to get some car jokes because Matthew's in studio. Steve, did you look at these?
I did, and yeah, they're good.
Okay, sometimes he doesn't laugh at my jokes. Okay. Number one, Confucius say, man who runs behind car will get exhausted, but man who runs in front of car will get tired. Number two, how do you know?
Moving on.
How do you know if someone is hitchhiking or just complimenting your driving? And number three, Subway is definitely the healthiest fast food available because they make you get out of your car to get it. Oh, excuse me. A couple of things. As you know, Hooters is one of my valued partners, and they are doing something really great this holiday season. Hooters Colorado, and they also have Little Richie's New York Pizzeria stores, are once again raising money for Realities for Children. So today or tomorrow, drop by Hooters restaurants, and you can make a donation, a cash donation, or you could certainly give them something for their silent auction. The big event is tomorrow night up at their restaurant up in Loveland. And what they're doing is they're raising money for Bikes for Tykes, and they're buying helmets and bicycles for local children who have been abused, neglected, or at risk for being abused or neglected. It's a great cause. 100% of the money goes to Hooters restaurants, and so would highly recommend that you join us in that. And then I had the girls over last night, Steve. I don't know if you heard us or not. We live close to each other, Matthew, so sometimes when I have the girls over, you can hear us, huh?
Well, I'd say sometimes it's not so much a hearing you as I notice the oxygen level drops in the neighborhood.
It was fun. And I had Hooters delivered. They have this great buffalo shrimp. All the girls love that. So would highly recommend that. Two other things. gosh, the pipes are doing something this morning, Steve. We're getting into the Christmas season. But January 8th, the new legislature convenes. And we need to let them know that we are watching them. So it is our Stand for Colorado Rally 2020, 11 o'clock on the steps of the Capitol. It's a Wednesday. I know that it's in the middle of the day. I know it's in January. But we need to let them know that we are watching. And we'll be announcing our speakers probably this weekend. Amazing speakers. And we really recommend that you be there and show up. We need to do some things to push back on what happened this last year. And I think that there could be some bad stuff coming again this year. So highly recommend that. And then on January 13th, our salon series, Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice apparently did a really great workshop at the Western Conservative Summit on the punches to knock down democratic socialism. And Helen Raleigh grew up in China under socialism, and it was standing room only. So they called and they said, hey, we'd like to do something with you, Kim. And so we're going to have it over at Jen Hewlin's at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial. And that will be January 13th from 5 to 8. So email me. We'll have an Eventbrite up for that very soon. And I would highly recommend that as well. So let's go ahead and jump into this. Not a whole lot more to say about impeachment. When Susan and Patty were in yesterday, we talked about that. But Christy Whaley had texted me. She said, what about what Hillary Clinton said when asked if you would abide by the results of this election? And, Steve, you went out there and you found the soundbite when Lester Holt was asking Hillary this question in one of the debates. So let's hear that.
My final question to you tonight, are you willing to accept the outcome as the will of the voters? Secretary Clinton?
Well, I support our democracy. And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But I certainly will support the outcome of this election. And I know Donald's trying very hard to plant doubts about it, but I hope the people out there understand this election's really up to you. It's not about us so much as it is about you and your families and the kind of country and future you want. So I sure hope you will get out and vote as though your future depended on it, because I think it does.
My final
apparently, people did get out and vote because our future has rest on this. And it's now been amazing that we're 3 years away from those particular comments, and they never did abide by that election. Steve, your thoughts?
Do you remember? Oh, geez, I'm gonna get myself in trouble here. Chalkboards.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna go there. The phrase "fingernails on the chalkboard." Mm-hmm. Why does her voice take me back to that time? I don't know. But yeah, what a classic soundbite in terms of all the baloney that's gone down in the last 3 years or more now. And boy, it's just a classic two-faced politician. And
you look, there was the whole Russia thing. There's of course the Ukrainian thing now. I actually can't remember everything that's come down the pike on that. When they were going to try to get rid of him via the amendment to the Constitution. It is amazing. They never did abide by this election. They never had any intention, and they never thought that they were going to lose that election. And so we've got to keep that soundbite, because we'll have to pay that and play that every once in a while. And Christy Whaley, thank you so much for reminding us to play that. Let's go to break. I'd like to do a quick headline, but we'll see if Sherry calls in. Wait just a second. I just want to mention this. You know, they're planning on moving the Bureau of Land Management to Grand Junction. And there's been some hand-wringing on this because some of the employees may not want to move to Grand Junction. Now, you ask me, Matthew, if it's between Washington, D.C. and Grand Junction, it's a no-brainer. I'm going to Grand Junction.
It's beautiful out there. That is for sure.
And apparently, the people in Washington working for the Bureau of Land Management, they get a 30% bump in their salary because of the housing costs.
Cost of living, yeah.
Cost of living. And so it's being portrayed by some that this is a cut in pay because they won't be getting that bump. But you're moving to Grand Junction. You're not living in Washington, D.C. Grand Junction, one of the most beautiful places, in the country. Cost of living is significantly less. And I really think it makes a lot of sense. First of all, some people will question whether or not we need some of these agencies. But if we have them, I think that they should be throughout the country instead of right there in Washington, D.C., where they're always talking to the legislators, the PBIs, instead of talking with the people that they represent. So this is a big thing that they're moving the BLM out to Grand Junction.
It's the first time I can recall moving an entire agency more than across the D.C. metro area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. And apparently tomorrow is the day, it's the deadline that people need to let them know whether or not they're going to move to Grand Junction if they're going to stay in Washington, D.C. Now, we did have William Perry Pinley on a couple of weeks ago, and he is the acting director mm-hmm. now of the Bureau of Land Management. And he said that there are people that can't move because, kids are in school, they may have parents. So they are working to try to get them into other agencies. But they are bringing this to Grand Junction, and I think that it's really huge.
For what it's worth, I think Senator Gardner really deserves a lot of credit for this. It's not easy to pick up an entire agency and relocate them, and I know that he was leading that charge for a while, and I think it's going to mean good things for Colorado.
Well, and I think it means good things for the people throughout America as well to start to get these agencies out there. I didn't realize he was really involved in that, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, well, good deal. Let's go to break. Matthew Groves with the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association is in studio, and we'll be talking about freedom to drive in segments 3 and 4. Sherry Pfeiff, bless her, she's on the line, and we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Charlie, you just never know what he's going to pull for our bumper music. I love that. Be sure and check out my website. It's kimmunson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. All the show recaps, podcasts, everything are there. Thrilled to have in studio with me Matthew Gross with the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association. We're going to be talking about freedom to drive in segments 3 and 4. And one of my most favorite people in the world, and that is Sherry Pyfe. She is a writer with Complete Colorado. She did a really important piece on dark money in these elections. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me, as always.
Greatly. I love these conversations. And you found some really interesting information about money in the elections recently. Why don't you take us through that a bit?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. So Politico did a story on this group who called the 60-30 Fund, and they're out of Washington, D.C. They pumped, you know, about $140 million into various states in 2018 for the election. And they just kind of skimmed over the fact that they were in Colorado. So I thought, well, heck, let's find out exactly where it went, because, you know, we had a lot of politicians in 2018 promising that they would not have anything to do with dark money.
And you know what, Sherry, why don't you explain to our listeners, what is dark money exactly?
Well, it's a group, a 501c4 that is allowed to spend a percentage of their donations on political issues. And they're not technically supposed to spend that money on candidates, but they can donate it to other organizations that, you know, supposedly educate the public about issues and or candidates. But they can only spend a certain amount of their money, because people who donate to that group are not, those donors are not revealed. They don't have to tell the IRS who their donors are.
And is it tax deductible if they donate to a 501c4?
It is not.
Okay.
It is not tax deductible.
Okay.
And that is why, because they don't have to reveal their donors. Therefore, the IRS feels you don't get to take that tax deduction. So it's just basically the same thing as donating to any other group. You just don't have to tell people who you are.
Okay.
Which is why they consider it dark money, because there's a faction of people out there that want to know who's donating to who. But the courts have long held that campaign donations are a First Amendment right to privacy, or to speech, freedom of speech. And so, anyway, so this group goes out and they donate all this money. So I decided to check out Tracer to see where exactly they had been in Colorado. And sure enough, lo and behold, almost $11 million funneled into Colorado.
Wow.
And it funneled into the very groups that were fighting things such as Amendment 74, which, if you remember correctly, that was the amendment that would have refunded or would have forced the government to pay property owners money if their property values decreased because of any type of government regulation.
Right.
They fought that issue. They also It also went to a group called Our Colorado Values. And Our Colorado Values was a group that funneled money into a ton of different candidates, progressive candidates across the state, including House District 50 Representative Rochelle Galindo. They were big in her campaign, and she was the one, if you remember, that stepped down amid sexual assault accusations.
Right.
So she ended up resigning. But the bigger part of this was they put money into a group, $600,000 of that $11 million. Well, okay, so let me back up. $900,000 of that money went to a group that ended up supporting Governor Polis. And another $600,000, more fascinating, went to a group that the only person they supported, the only thing they did, was support Phil Weiser for AG and oppose George Brockler for AG. Now, Phil Weiser spent his entire campaign, and I quote him in the story, in several different situations from his website, from other newspaper reports. He spent his entire campaign campaigning against dark money. He pledged that if anybody out there was supporting him, he would call on them to reveal their donors. He even went so far as to call out the Republican District Attorneys Association, or the Republican AGs, I can't remember, the Republican District Attorneys Association maybe, for the money that they pumped into George Brockler's campaign. He just went overboard on his dislike of dark money, but yet $600,000 of this group's money went straight to his campaign because it went to an organization that did nothing except support Phil Weiser.
Okay.
And yet he never called them out.
Okay, so Sherry, if I'm following you correctly on this, now I happen to agree. I think that being able to donate to candidates is free speech, and I'm not sure that I really think that all this should be revealed. I don't know. Matthew, what do you think about that?
I'm with you on that.
Are you?
No,
okay, Sherry? Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
I'm with you on that, Kim. You know, I don't, when I say dark money, I always laugh and put it in quotes. Because the reason that the 501c4 process became part of the whole equation was back during the years of when the NAACP was first getting started, and people were donating to that. And then there were those same people that were donating to that were being penalized or I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for, and I apologize, it escapes me. But people were taking it out on them for donating to it. So there is a certain part of freedom of speech that you should be allowed to donate to certain organizations without fear of repercussion. That was the word I was looking for.
Yep.
Without fear of repercussion. And we know that exists in this day and age. In addition to that, you have people like Governor Polis who are able to, you know, Tom Steyer, Michael Bloomberg, who are able to self-fund their campaigns. And not everybody can pump out $25, $30 million of their own money to run for public office. So they should be able to turn to anybody that they want in order to help them run for public office. The dark money, to me, is a term that is just silly.
Okay. Matthew, your thoughts on that?
I dislike money in politics, period. I think it overshadows voting for people who they are because they can get their message out more. But it is there, and it's, you know, well within your rights to donate to somebody that you believe should represent you. So I think there needs to be lines drawn, because on the other hand of this, you know, you can definitely say that money is political speech, but when the money is coming into a place that maybe it shouldn't be, like with California's money coming in on the national popular vote, those are people trying to impact politics that don't necessarily impact them directly. I have a little bit more trouble with that.
Okay.
I don't know where those lines should be drawn, but it's definitely something that should be a part of a larger national conversation. Thus far, we have litigated this through the Supreme Court, and I don't think the Congress has been very active in it, and I'd like to see them be more active in it.
What I find so interesting, and we're going to go to John Buckingham in just a minute, Sherry, but, you know, so all these campaign finance laws were put in place, and I really think that, again, it's free speech. And I realize that, you know, one of the things that on these campaign finance laws that they say that we want to, you know, watch all this big money coming into different elections. But then what's happened is people figure out ways to, I'm not going to say cheat, but to, like Phil Weiser, he's saying one thing, that he's not going to take any dark money. And then what I'm hearing you say, Sherry, is that there is an organization, it came in, and you can't give to a political campaign, but it gave to an organization that all they did was support him. And so, in essence, you still have all this money. It's just that they found different ways to get around it. I guess that will be the thing that I'll say. And then if their opponent is found to do the same thing, then they cry campaign finance violations. And that's what I find somewhat concerning. Sherry, what's your final thought on this? This is an excellent piece. It's in Complete Colorado. Would highly recommend that you go to that. You go to the website, Complete Colorado. You click on the banner at the top, and that'll take you to their original content. And Sherry's piece is there. Sherry, what's your final thought?
And I agree with you. And I think, and I also agree with Michael to a point. I think campaign finance laws are so complicated and so hard to tweak and so hard to determine how where you set that line, because he's right. You know, this, all of this money, this $11 million came into Colorado from Washington, D.C. You know, here we have a situation where on a national scale, we're concerned about Russia and they're meddling in the American politics, but yet we continue to allow California and other states like Washington to meddle in Colorado politics. So somewhere there's a line that has to be drawn, but how you draw that line is tough. And so, yeah, right now the way it's set up, you know, it is what it is. But, yes, they do. They continue to find ways around the laws that are in place and ways that, you know, they are completely legal. And it's something there has to be a larger conversation, and I do agree with that.
Okay, well, Sherry Pfeiff, you do such great investigative journalism. I so appreciate your good work on this. And so keep up the great work, and appreciate you joining us to kind of unpack that a little bit. And again, you can find Sherry's original content at Complete Colorado. Sherry, thanks so much.
Thank you, Kim, as always.
Okay. We're going to jump over. John Buckingham with Presidential Wealth Management is on the line. Jason is taking a few days off. And so, John, it's great to have you on the line.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I appreciate it.
You know, and we're going to be talking in the third and fourth segment with Matthew Groves. He's with the Colorado Automobile. I always have a hard time saying that. Can you say that?
Yeah. Automobile dealer. I just say CADA. It's
a lot
easier.
It is. And, you know, there seems to be this real movement to get people out of our cars. And, you know, freedom of transportation, freedom to move around is really inherent in, I think, John, in a vibrant middle class. But what we're seeing, it's not only in freedom to drive. We're seeing all this climate legislation, you know, across all different kinds of issues. And is it affecting the market? What do you think about that?
Well, I think domestically anyway, it will eventually impact us. We're a little bit behind Europe in how restrictive we are and how aggressive.
I'm going to say we're a bit ahead of them as far as
I agree. But in terms of the impact, we're behind them because the restrictions and regulations aren't as strict as they are, say, in Germany, where you've seen over the last 10 years electric bills rise by roughly 50% because they've forced so much of their energy production into green energy production, which they in turn subsidize to try and make it look cheaper, but yet it's not. And so that impact is really crushing European economies right now to a degree. And now you're seeing the individual states like California, Washington just came out, I think it was yesterday or day before, with, you know, these insane goals of, you know, I think Washington wants to get to 100% clean energy production by 2045. And I think they're at like 12 right now, which, you know, it's not feasible. And that money's got to come from somewhere. So if they continue to subsidize green energy, that just takes that money out of the pockets of consumers via higher electric bills, higher state taxes, and that's less money for the overall economy in other sectors. So the energy sector might like it, or the people producing the green energy might like it, but the rest of the economy suffers as a result.
And, you know, John, one of the things that I say on this show is it's freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And if something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people. And when you say subsidy, mandate, regulate, those are all force words. And so, you know, I think that we're all in an all and above energy portfolio. As long as it makes sense, we need something reliable. We need something that's affordable and efficient. The other night, I went up to Fort Collins for the Tapas and Topics meeting up there, and my neighbor called and she said our electricity is out. And it was out for a couple of hours. And she said all we did was just sit around. And, you know, so having reliable, efficient, and affordable energy. And she said the house was getting cold also. I think we take it for granted, John. And to see this, you know, this movement on this legislation, I think ultimately it will really hurt us. So thanks so much on that. One other thing, though, I cannot believe Christmas is less than 2 weeks away. And there are some things that people need to do before year end. And it would be very helpful to sit down with you and your colleagues over at Presidential Wealth Management. Just do a discovery session. And, you know, we believe in paying every penny of taxes that we legally are supposed to, but not a penny more. And you guys can help people sit down and take a look at that.
We can absolutely do that. And this is a perfect time of the year to be taking care of all the tax strategies that you can before year end so that you can, again, pay your legal share, but, you know, minimize the impact to your wallet. So
love that. So John Buckingham, Presidential Wealth Management. Natalie will be at the switchboards at 7:30. It's 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Our landing page is airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. John, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks so much and have a great day.
Hey, you do the same. Thanks.
Okay, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, freedom to drive. Freedom to go where you want to, when you want to. It's inherent in the American idea. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Denver, and the historic 88 Drive-In Theater for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at KimMunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at KimMunson, MONSON.com.
You better watch out. You better not cry.
Oh, this song was made for Steve when he was a little kid.
Santa Claus is
okay, this is Kim Munson. This is the Kim Munson Show. Welcome back. I'm thrilled to have in studio with me Matthew Groves. You are with the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association.
Yes, ma'am.
And one of the things that that is important, it's inherent in the American idea, is being able to move around.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you can buy a vehicle that allows you to go out and create a business, it's great. I mean, how many businesses have been created with a pickup truck?
Oh, tons, tons.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And we've seen a real assault on this freedom to drive out in California. Here in Colorado, we're trying to be California wannabes, I think. And that is I remember Governor Hickenlooper kind of on his way out the door, he did an executive order, mm-hmm. a mandate, a force that would say that trying to move people into what's called LEVs, low emission vehicles.
Right.
It's a bit of a misnomer, but that's what they're calling them. And then Governor Polis had hardly gotten into office, and he did another forced mandate.
14 days after
he... Was it 14 days? On ZEV, zero-emission vehicles. And in essence, my understanding is that it would penalize dealers if they didn't sell a percentage of their portfolio.
So that's not entirely true. The penalty would be on the manufacturers. But what will happen is that the manufacturers have to deliver these electric vehicles. And so when you go out to your local car lot, that's what you're going to see is the vehicles that the manufacturers are putting in inventory. And that's going to have to be a certain percentage electric. So the cars that you want to buy in Colorado, you know, that's an F-150, F-250, a Tacoma, Durango, things like that. They're going to be increasingly replaced by things like Chevy Bolts and Nissan Leafs and, you know, things that may or may not work for you.
Okay, so that'll be on the lot.
That is a large part of what you'll see, yeah. You know, the other thing that low emission makes difficult for us is we can't just hop state lines anymore. So if I lived in Fort Collins and this were the case and I couldn't find the car I wanted, I'd go up to Cheyenne or Laramie. If the car does not have a low emission vehicle sticker on it, you will not be able to bring it back to Colorado and register it.
So there are.
You would have to get one from California or Washington State or one of the other low emission states that has that compliance sticker on it, so long as it's a new car. It's a little bit different with a used car.
When does this go into effect?
This will be model year 2022, so it would actually be calendar year 2021. It is not far around the corner.
Wow.
You know, now there is a little bit of relief coming at the federal level where California was able to set this program because it had the federal government's permission, and the federal government has now revoked that permission. So there is a litigation in Washington, D.C. about what the future of those rules will be. And there's some litigation here in Colorado about what the future of those rules will be. I don't want to look into a crystal ball there. We obviously have our opinion on how this should play out. But I think what's important for your listeners to know is that the city is taking an active role in trying to dictate not only today but in the future how they will get around. So,
city meaning Denver?
Well, every level of government, the state government, the city government, the county, you know, wherever you might happen to live, because this is not unique to Denver.
Right.
They sort of are ahead of the game a little bit, but it is throughout the Front Range. Mm-hmm. Low emission and zero emission were two very large rules, but they were the first two steps in a much longer path to get people into decarbonized cars, which is kind of a misnomer for electric vehicle because it absolutely emits. And then
they don't take, they don't take into account, first of all, you have these rare earth minerals that go into these car batteries. Mm-hmm. And so they don't talk about that. They don't talk about the transportation of getting those cars, you know, to the lot. I mean, there's a whole lot of things. So we have a bunch of misnomers going on here.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's the cobalt that goes into electric vehicle batteries. It is the manganese that you will find both in batteries and in solar panels. And that can actually leach into the drinking water. I mean, when I was before I came here, I was a congressional staffer, and I worked for a part of California that had Hinckley in it. And if you remember the Aaron Brockovich case with the hexavalent chromium in the drinking water, there's all sorts of bad stuff out there that has public health effects. But the environmental advocates are looking past that towards the goal of decarbonization because greenhouse gases have been determined that they're the evil right now, and we can deal with the rest of it.
I think a lot of this is about power and kind of control over people's lives. Somebody's decided that they think people should have electric vehicles instead of an internal combustion engine. And so they're using public policy to make that happen.
You know, and again, if electric vehicles were their end game, I think that might be a conversation we could have. But ultimately, even the CDOT director has said that this is a stopgap. Eventually, they want to get you out of vehicles because that's the only way to get to true zero emissions, to have people walking, scootering, biking, things of that nature.
But a lot of people can't live their lives on doing that.
Well, I mean, if you think even when you drop your kids off at school, if you're in Denver Public Schools, how many Denver Public School teachers make enough to live in Denver? So they're going to have to get schools, the places where you go to the restaurants, the hotels that you stay at, their employees have to get there, and they're probably not making money at a level, many of them, where they can live close to where they work. You know, I walk to work a lot of times, and it's 2 miles, and it's about 40 minutes. Any longer of a walk than that, then you're really cutting into your day on a round-trip commute. So, you know, you mentioned earlier that you had a girls' night over at your house, and that's great that you can do that because people can come and probably park within two or three houses of yours. What we're seeing at the municipal level is a lot of parking spaces disappearing. When you build a large multi-residential or commercial building, you used to have I believe the threshold was 1.7 parking spaces for 1,000 square feet of commercial. That's now been reversed, and instead of a minimum, that's a maximum. And they're actually encouraging people to go lower than that. So if there are no parking garages under the buildings, you're pushing more cars out into the streets. They're taking the parking spots on the streets away to make way for buses and bikes and things that are heavily underutilized. And, you know, if you were to live, say, downtown, that would prevent your friends from coming over and having that conversation with you. The thing that I find troubling is, you know, one of the knocks against this generation is that they don't get outside enough. They don't, you know, they spend too much time inside attached to devices. They don't have enough activities to keep that entertained and off of the opioids. And we're making it harder for them to get across town. Like, it's going to be more difficult to get to that soccer practice that's 8 to 9 miles away. It's going to be more difficult to drive over to your friend's house if your friend also lives downtown and, and you can't go and be social and have those relationships. It forces people even more back onto the devices.
I hadn't really thought about that. But, you know, as you mentioned, anytime I'm going into an area where I know there's going to be difficult parking, I actually kind of mentally go, is this worth it? Is this worth me going, you know, going through the brain damage of going down there, trying to find a parking spot, the cost of finding a parking spot?
Absolutely.
And I hadn't thought about it until you just mentioned it. Having the girls come over last night, it was great. I mean, there was great freedom in it. We got together. We had a great time, great conversation. And people being able to connect, I think that's what you're talking about, is being able to connect.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the reasons Denver is so attractive and that people live downtown is because of the low cost of living and, you know, the culture. So people want to go out and go to these great restaurants with these great chefs. But what these great chefs are finding is that if my workers can't get there, I can't serve people. And if the diners can't get there, I can't serve people. So Washington, D.C., where I had come from, is a little bit ahead of the game in this. But you saw the famous chefs taking their downtown restaurants, their legacy shops, and moving them out to the suburbs because, one, the rent's cheaper. Mm-hmm. Two, the labor restrictions aren't quite so intense. And three, you have parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
So people can come and stay for an hour, hour and a half, and go home. And they do much better out there. It's more highly profitable because they're not subject to such strict regulations. And people can come and go as they please.
Mm-hmm.
If you are looking at downtown, just take, you know, Larimer Square. There's probably 20 restaurants down there.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't get people in there to work those jobs that, you know, aren't they're not the highest paying jobs in the world, so people are making a commitment to travel to be working there.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hollow out downtown, and those low level jobs will evaporate, those places will disappear, and there will the culture that brings people to Denver will eventually sprawl out into the suburbs, which is the opposite of what the planners making these transportation decisions want.
Okay, so I don't know if you saw this was from CPR. No, that's not the one I wanted to talk about. Oh, I had it right here. Ah, here we go. It is from KOAA, and it is down in Colorado Springs. It says, the city discusses their parking plan for a new stadium. Now, Matthew, Colorado Springs wants to put in a new stadium. They said, interestingly enough, they said that there will be no government money that was going into it. And then the next thing Patty found was that they were getting money from the Colorado, I think it was the Economic Development Office. I think Patty, she'll probably text me on that. Anyway, they were getting government money for this. Mm-hmm. So they're putting in this stadium, and they're not putting in enough parking.
Mm-hmm.
It says the community leaders will break ground this weekend on a new downtown soccer stadium. The $35 million facility is expected to be open in time for the Colorado Springs Switchbacks 2020-2021 season. The construction site takes up an entire city block. Noticeably absent are any plans for on-site parking. Colorado Springs Economic Development Officer Bob Cope explained that it was intentional. Bob Cope, there we go. Because everybody would be coming in to one point at one time, and at the end of the game, they would all be leaving from one point at one time, Cope said. The rush of vehicles would lead to traffic jams, so instead the development plan calls for a dispersed parking concept where existing public garages and on-street spaces are used. The stadium will be built with 8,100 seats, and the study estimates a maximum need of 24 spaces for a sold-out game. They identified 33 parking spaces within a 10-minute walk of the stadium. The city certainly understands the Sunrise... Oh, you know what? I got myself mixed up here on these. Okay, anyway.
Well, I definitely take the point. And I will say, when I first moved to Colorado, I commuted down to the Springs to work down on the north side. And I absolutely love that city. And I think that Mayor Suthers has a unique opportunity to be an example of how transportation can be done right.
Okay.
A good contrast to what Denver's trying to do right now. And, you know, I think as an organization, we would love to work with him and help him in that effort. As it pertains to this particular project, I think it's different than the NFL, right? With football, you're getting a very specific type of person in there because the tickets are so expensive. Mm-hmm. Soccer was designed to be a game for the people. It's, you know, $10 to get a ticket into a soccer game, and it draws a different and a more fervent crowd. I don't know the area very well where the stadium's going to be, but I can tell you, at least from living in Denver, when the weather stinks, as it sometimes does, nobody's going to want to walk 10 minutes to get into a stadium to then stand outside for an hour or 2 hours of soccer game to then walk back to
their
car.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Especially if it's raining. It's going to give them some logistical issues. So, you know, I think there are ways that it can be made to work, but I question the mathematics of having 24 spots for 8,100 people.
Mm-hmm.
That
2,400.
That seems off.
Well, and Patty just actually she texted me and said that they received a state grant for this. So yes, there was government money, and I did get my papers all in order here. I think we'll go to break, but I'm going to just mention this. It says the largest public parking garages downtown are also located the farthest from the stadium. The Antlers Hotel has approximately 1,000 spaces, and the city's garage at Colorado Avenue and Nevada Avenue can hold 1,400. Both are located at the edge of a 10-minute walk shed. And then they go through some other things. But, you know, thinking that they're going to use private enterprises parking spots, what if the Antlers Hotel has a convention or something going on? This does not seem well planned out to me, but it also looks to me like public policy that's trying to push people
sure.
Into a different mode of transportation.
Well, you know, there's that. But again, with soccer being affordable and accessible to people, if you have to pay for those spots on top of going to the game, it makes the game more expensive. And you would hate to see people be economically pushed out of going to support the Switchbacks just because of the transportation situation.
Okay. So good point on that. We're going to go to break. I kind of got myself over here on a different thought on this. And I want to come back to, you know, some of the things that you want to make sure that our listeners know about transportation, freedom to drive. This is Kim Munson. I have in studio with me Matthew Groves with the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, spelled MONSON.com. Steve, you said you had a little comment.
After that last break, the music was Santa Claus is Coming to Town. You seem to be suggesting that I was the poster child for bad behavior before Christmas.
Yeah.
And I just want you to know I checked. That song came out in 1934, long before I was on this earth. So,
well, you know, actually, I heard that one of your letters to Santa, it started out, "Dear Santa, I can explain."
Well, I could.
Okay, Matthew Groves, it's great to have you in studio. Freedom to drive. I, you know, it's because of freedom to drive that I can come over here and do this show. I couldn't be standing out on a bus platform at 4 o'clock in the morning to try to get over here. It would, you know, I mean, it takes so much time. I would not feel safe. Government telling us how to move around, I mean, that's pretty scary.
It's a slippery slope, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, people make things work for them, and when options are taken off the table, it very seldom goes well for the constituents. So one of the things that I think I would like to express about Freedom Drive is, you know, there's been a lot of talk, and we've done a couple of shows about this low-emission and zero-emission vehicle. That was one small piece of the pie.
And really?
Really, we are starting to turn our attention towards all of the other things that are largely happening in the cities. But I don't know if you've driven in downtown Denver lately, but they've taken a lane out of 15th Street, and they've made it a bus-only lane now. So we stood out there.
So there's how you have congestion.
Absolutely. It was already a congested road. We stood out there one afternoon during the rush hour and counted how many people were in cars, how many people were in buses, how many people were on bikes, and it was 98% still in vehicles. A lot of people didn't understand the restrictions, so there were cars driving in the bus lanes. There were the vast majority of the bikers, the very few bikers that there were not in the bike lanes. They were still on the sidewalks. One brave soul was going straight down the middle and in between the cars. So it's when you know that you have a congestion problem, when you intentionally make that worse, it's almost a matter of, are you trying to make it so difficult that people get out of cars? Because they can't force you out of cars, so they're just going to manipulate the environment so that you give up.
I think that's going on.
Absolutely it is, but it's just that's not why people come to Denver. And it's really disappointing to say that if you play that out, trying to make it so difficult that you don't want to drive, eventually you're going to try to make it so difficult that you don't want to live here anymore. Because that is one of the prime reasons that people are leaving New York City, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, because they don't want to spend their life in the car. Some people love it. It's their sanctuary. You know, it's my karaoke machine, for lack of a better term. But you're going somewhere because you want to get there. And when it takes an hour, I had a meeting last night down on Colorado and Mexico, and I left the house 27 minutes before the meeting started. And it took me 35 minutes to get halfway there just to get to Colorado Boulevard, to the extent that I was going to miss the thing entirely. I have never seen anything like that in Colorado before. And maybe I'm a little naive because I have a young child and I'm generally at home during rush hour. But to say that we are that gridlocked and that there aren't better solutions, I passed three buses that I think had a combined six people on them.
And you know, they're taking a lot of room on the road, and then a carbon footprint to have three people riding around on a bus, or the carbon footprint when I come over, when Steve and I many times come over, the trains are empty.
Public transit is great for people who want to take it. You know, for all the years that I was in D.C., if you could deal with the smell of burning steel, then the Metro got you where you wanted to be pretty quickly. Government regulation can't force people to do things. And if people don't want to take public transit because they're scared, because it's too expensive. I mean, if you think $2 each way per day times a five-day week, it's $50 a week just to get to and from. That's not insignificant if you don't get fringe benefits from your employer.
And that does not cover the actual cost of operation for transit. Typically, your fare only covers maybe 20 to 25% of the actual cost.
Sure.
And so that's being subsidized by everybody else.
And, you know, from a life on the East Coast, I will tell you, one, I would never put my daughter on transit by herself. That's not safe. You know, if you talk to a lot of New Yorkers, I think they say, as a New Yorker, it's a rite of passage that you're not truly a New Yorker until you've been thrown up on the subway.
Oh, no.
There's all sorts of life issues like that. When you see a six-car train and one of them is empty, it's generally because somebody's going to the bathroom in it. I know. Definitely, it's not present, but it's the prisoner's dilemma, right? Nobody's, you know, in the car industry, we say nobody washes the rental car. If there's no responsibility over it, if nobody's there to maintain order, then people are just going to treat it poorly. And it's, you know, it's a lack of respect for the public transportation. It's a lack of respect for the city, but it is in part in reaction to the feeling that the city is doing this to me. And whether that feeling is rational or not, I think it's becoming very prevalent. And that animosity is one of the things that sparked Freedom to Drive. So I think we want to be there to protect people's rights to move about. That, you know, if Saturday comes around and I don't want to be in Denver, I want to go up to the mountains, I want to go down to the springs. I personally like hiking Manitou. I think it's great. I can't walk down there. It's an hour and a half drive. And people should have that ability. That's why people are coming here.
Well, and we're just about out of time, but there has been this narrative by PBIs that, oh, we're having all these millennials come here, and they don't want their cars. They want to be able to, you know, ride their bikes you know, ride around on buses. It's not true. The other day I was – well, it may be true. I should say it may be true for some people. You can never make a blanket statement. But I was downtown and at a parking lot going into a building, and there was an older home that clearly had been converted into apartments. Mm-hmm. And I looked, and so they had a parking lot in the back, and so they could have six spaces. And so there were two cars deep, you know, two rows. Mm-hmm. Six cars. Clearly, there was a bunch of, you know, young kids living in that place, and they all had their cars.
For sure.
And so this narrative that they're trying to push us out of having our vehicles, it really concerns me.
The thing that I think is lost is that if you want to ride trains, if you want to ride bikes, you can do that. You don't need the government's help to do that. I mean, people are out there doing it right now. To force more people to do it, and I think this is, you know, if it's true for cars, it's definitely true for bikes. The more people you put on bikes in those bike lanes, the more accidents you're going to have, because you're going to have irresponsible bikers the way you have irresponsible drivers.
Well, I've seen them. I certainly have seen them. So we're just about out of time, but the website is freedomtodrive.org.
And you know what I would actually tell your listeners? Yes, freedomtodrive.org, very important what we are doing, and we would love to have your support if you agree with our mission. But I would also tell you to look at our opponents. Go read the blogs for the bike advocates, for the public transit advocates, and see what they're doing, because reading that is really going to be the shock value that makes you turn around and come back to our page and say, wait a minute, I'm not on board with this. I'm paying for it. It's not benefiting me. And I don't agree with what the city's doing. So, you know, if you go onto our Facebook page at Freedom to Drive, you will see me reposting and commenting articles that are insightful of the state of mind of the other side. And I think that is important to understand, and that will probably bring you back to our way of thinking.
Well, fantastic. So that's Freedom to Drive. Matthew Groves, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And our quote is Mario Andretti. He says, if you think you're in control, then you're not going fast enough. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice in the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Twisting, turning further from my home. Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them.